Welcome to the Natural Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Whitfield Cook. Join us as we interview expert clinicians, researchers, and well-being experts from around the world and explore the evidence and application of complementary medicine in global healthcare. The following podcast is intended as professional information for integrative medicine practitioners and as such must not be taken as medical advice. Patients are expressly directed to seek appropriate care from a suitably qualified practitioner. Hi everyone, welcome back. Today we're chatting with Naomi Reed and we're talking about the transition from uni to business. Welcome to the Natural Medicine Podcast, Naomi. How are you?
I'm good, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Now, you and I podcasted on another channel, Wellness by Designs, but I do want to delve into some different areas if we can. But first of all, let's go back. Let's set the stage. What drew you to naturopathy in the first place?
Okay, so pretty much when I was 19, I had this whole big revelation and started to fall in love with health and really wanted to start looking after myself and eating well and got into doing different things on my own. And then I went down the track of, I did a Cert 3 in fitness, actually. That's how I started off. And I went, this isn't for me. I'm not a fitness person. I don't want to be in this area. And I've always loved food. I've always loved cooking. So then that led me into doing my nutrition degree. And then was almost at the end of my nutrition degree. And I went, these naturopaths, they have all these other tools and all these things to help our clients so much more. And that what led me to, after my nutrition degree, I delved straight into my naturopathy degree, which I'm almost finished now, which is quite exciting. But yeah, that's what led me into it. I just really wanted to help people on a broader scale and have more tools and ways to be able to help them through herbal medicine as well as nutrients.
I totally agree with you with herbs. Like, I could not use herbs. But speaking to your colleagues who did nutrition and stopped there, what would be your call out to them about what they could possibly miss out on? And just as a flip to that, if you only did nutrition and stopped there, what would your practice look like?
Wow. Okay. So I think with naturopathy, especially now that I'm nearly finished and I have the whole realm and the whole aspects of looking at it from a whole, it's like with a herb, you have, say, anywhere from 3 to 10 different actions that you can use from one herb. And that herb can be used for so many different things, not just one thing. Whereas nutrients, it's like, oh, you have a vitamin D deficiency, let's give you vitamin D. And it's more like, I feel like nutrients is very, okay, this is textbook, this is what we do, we give this for this. Whereas herbs are a lot more, oh, you have the energetics of this, or you have the constitution of this, or this herb is specific for this person and their personality type. And I think it delves so much deeper into not just, I know we love the science and yes, we work with the science and you got to look at that, but also it's on such a deeper level of holism and holistic medicine and going back to really using it from the energetic point of view, which is what I love. That's what I've found to be the most exciting part of it. So I feel like herbs, you can really help people on a deeper level than just giving them a food or a nutrient. Like, yes, we need food to live and we all eat, but I think herbs they've really captured me over. They've really, like, yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree. My one point, though, is it's about not forgetting your roots, and that is that herbs are not culinary in their administration. They're in therapeutic doses, and we need to know specifically about those herbs in those therapeutic doses, because even something like, say, rosemary can have quite a strong action, particularly for somebody who's sensitive to them. Let's say somebody with epilepsy, something like that. And I think one of the main things that we really need to remember when delivering these medicaments is that we must always think about trying to go back to the food, trying to go back to the normalcy of living rather than another tablet or liquid or, you know, remedy.
Definitely. And even just going back to, like, for instance, I'm at the moment planting a huge herb garden and getting all my fruits and veggies up. And it's going back to that, what we used to do, like putting our hands in the soil, growing our own food, picking it, even the herbs, like, and being proud of what we've produced and cooking that up and going really back to basics instead of this, oh, we just go to the supermarket, pop something off the shelf and cook it. And there's not that connection. Like, we've really missed that connection through traditional medicine, traditional eating, traditional, like, how we look after ourselves even.
Oh, totally agree. And if there would be one good thing out of COVID, and we're really grabbing at straws here, it's that a lot of people went, you know what, I can't move around the countryside, even to the shops for some people. What it did was cause people to say, blow it, I'm going to grow my own veggies. And I just hope that after the lockdowns ended and things like that, the people really grasped that with their heart and went, I really like this. You know, like, we have a couple of gardens out the front. We're by no means farmers. We fail at so many things. Yeah. But chilies, eggplants, chives, simple things. We can grow those quite well our own. Limes, oh my God, you know, hey, I need to drink more tequila, really. if we can only grasp that in whatever form we can, even if it's a little plantar box outside our unit getting some little bit of sun, growing some herbs, I think that's so important. And it's really interesting how we say herbs, but they're culinary. So it gets back to that nutrition bit, doesn't it?
Yes, always. Hmm. And even with the price of food is skyrocketing at the moment, as everybody knows. I think everybody's going through it. So having even just a culinary herb garden with, say, basil, thyme, parsley, just the fundamentals, you're going to save so much money because it's $3 to $4 for one tiny little bunch of herbs. Like, it's insane when you could be having your own in your garden out the front and you can go, oh, I've made this pasta dish. I'm going to go out the front of my house and grab some parsley and add it to it. And it's just, it's like a ritual. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good. So let's get back to naturopathy and what you've learned there. We're talking about this transition from business into practice. So first I want to delve into what you learnt as a student and seeing people in clinic, in student clinic, and then seeing these patients in the real world, and I forgive me for differentiating student clinic from the real world, but when they come in with commonly a lot more complex conditions, how do you navigate through that? How do you use what you learned with a textbook, quote unquote, and then do I say the word mature into an experienced naturopath where you can take on complex patient stories?
Yes. So I think it's growing and developing professionally within going from a student clinic where you are wholeheartedly supported and you have everyone there to support you and help you and jump on it if you need it, to being out on your own, it was such a big learning curve. I remember the first time I got a complex case and I just went, oh, all right, this is me. This is what I'm doing. I've done all the hard stuff. I'm here to help this person, and thinking about them and taking on their case and going, I'm here to hold space for them. And it was so interesting to really have the tools and techniques and figure out what I need to do and how I can help this person the best I possibly can, but also going away and researching. And I was really given the tools to understand how I can help people with their complex cases, because I think you don't really realize that what we do get usually is people coming to us as the last resort because they've tried everything else. They have done everything they possibly can, and they come to us going, I don't know what to do. I'm here. This is my issues. I don't know where I'm going or how I'm supposed to. It's their last choice. So then they come to us and we listen and we help and we can help. That's the beauty of it. It's amazing. So yeah, I've really, really enjoyed that. And it's been great to understand the ways around it and what I can do. Yeah.
Naomi, I love your heart. And that is that the words you say means so much to hopefully anybody who's going to listen out there. And you said the words, you want to hold space for them. That's so important. I think we really need to, as practitioners, hold that the patient's health is sacrosanct and that we are there for them. It's this whole thing of being for service. So, well done to you, I've got to say. I remember the first time I met you. You're a bright spark. You would have been the annoying person in the back of the class going, oh, I've got another question. am I correct?
Or sometimes it depends. I feel like I was very with theory and books, and I do love it, but I always found it very hard. I'm very hands-on when I'm in the space, when I'm in clinic, that's when I thrive. When it comes to book smarts, I can do it. I love it, but also I wouldn't say that I am the AAA student that gets good marks, but I think that I have the real world experience and I have customer service experience, and that's how I know how to hold the space. That's how I know to help my patients and understand them and come from a one-on-one picture, because that's where I really thrive.
You said another important thing, and that was that often patients come to see you as a last resort. So they're very commonly already on medicines, even if they might be failing or not giving them much relief or the relief that they expected, at least. How do you find that your education prepared you for working with medicines and also for dialoguing, for communicating with orthodox medical practitioners about the patient that's come to see you?
Medications is number one. It's drilled into us from day dot. It's the first question you always ask. Patient comes in, what medications are you on? What's the dosage? Why are you on it? How long have you been on it? It's the number one most important thing when they come to us. You need to be on the ball with that, because if you miss it, that can be the difference between you prescribing something that's contraindicated and you not prescribing at all because they are on the medications. You need to, it's fundamental. So medications is huge. And I think especially this day and age, we know, I'm not bad-mouthing doctors at all. They are doing their job, but we know that they get seen a sign or symptom and they'll prescribe a drug or a medication to help that patient. And we need to understand that sometimes it might not actually be right, but also, again, we need to hold space and understand that they've been given this medication for what they think is right and know how to deal with that in a way of how we can help them from a deficiency perspective, even like they might be deficient because of the medications that they're on. Or yeah, I think medications is huge.
Yeah. If I can give one call out for anybody listening, it's Yvonne Coleman. She's a dietitian and her business is Nutrition Consultants Australia. She's got this brilliant setup. I think it's all online now. I've got this massive folder in my bookcase. But I guess my next question is, communicating with those doctors about what you're doing. One of the things I found coming from nursing, where you learn about conditions and their appropriate treatment, and then going to the paradigm of natural medicine when you're talking about systems management and support, do you find that's hard to communicate your paradigm to an orthodox medical practitioner?
Yes, I would say you really have to be so careful about what you say. You have to be very careful about how you go about it. You really need to make sure that you're not stepping on anybody's toes and you know your line of degree of where you can go and what you can say. Because if you overstep that, it's everything. You can't be doing that. You need to understand that they're the doctor. They have their time and place. We're the naturopath. We have our time and place. It's actually really interesting. I actually did have a client recently who was sent to me from a doctor not specifically me, but they found me and they said, oh, my doctor said to see a naturopath. And I was shook. I nearly fell off my chair. But it's amazing to see that. It's good to know that they understand that there is a time and place for us. And I think they are understanding more that we do have a role in healthcare.
I think with the advances that we've had in education, and particularly from the universities, and I'm not denigrating the colleges, the private colleges, but particularly from the universities, that the medicos are seeing that they've got it's not a VTEC standard, but a university standard to their education. The interesting thing is when you speak to people like John Wardle from Southern Cross Uni, he'll talk about that there's many doctors who are interested, but they just haven't got the time nor the inclination to learn it themselves. So they farm out where they're, you know, where the medical model has reached its limitations of treatment.
Yeah.
So on to business. Now, this is something you and I have spoken about before, because I remember clinic law, ethics and business, and the whole class complained. Nothing was changed. But how did you find the business aspects, the marketing aspects of your course?
I think it definitely needs to be updated. I think it was a good introduction base level. It was good to understand how to write a business plan, how to find a little bit more data about how to start a business, but it was nowhere near what you needed to actually start a business. When I was almost finished starting out, like buying my business name, getting the business set up, getting all those things ready, all the legalities, I remember just going, wow, I feel like I almost needed to do another degree just on business to understand how to set myself up properly, because there's so many little nooks and crannies and things that you need to know that you're not told and you're not taught and you won't understand unless I actually ended up buying the Starting a Business for Dummies book, because I was just that lost and couldn't understand.
Writing that down now.
Yeah. And it actually helped so much. It was an Australian one, and it really did help to understand where to buy my business name, what insurances I needed to have, what other, like, did I need to trademark my name? Did I need to, like, all these other little bits and pieces that you don't know if you need or you don't. If I should be a sole trader or a company, what the different prices are. There's so many things within business that you need to know before starting. So yes, I definitely think it was a good introduction, but there needs to be a lot more in depth in that module to understand going from finishing college to actually starting your own business.
Now, you being a proactive person as well, you thought, to heck with this. You started to prepare something to help others who are following along behind you.
Yes, I actually did. I actually ended up writing Starting a Business for a New Grad. It's a little ebook that I have. And I thought all my other colleagues, they were asking me, they were like, oh, how are you starting your business? Where are you getting your information from? How are you doing this? And I just went, you know what? I've done all this research. I've put it all together for myself. I've figured out how to do this. Why not write a mini ebook for my fellow practitioners to help them to understand how to start a business? Because you need so much. Even when you finish uni, for instance, you're so burnt out. Like, even if you've looked after yourself the whole degree, you've done this huge 3 to 4 year degree, everyone's just like, oh my God, that was so full on. The last thing you really want to be thinking about is how to start a business and how to get it off the ground. But me being me, who loves to not just chill, I was like, I'm starting mine. I'm ready to do it. Let's go. And so that's why I ended up writing the ebook. To help everybody else, because they just kept asking me questions and I was like, let's put it into an easy to read book for everyone.
So therefore, would you advocate that current students start their business procedures, if you like, way before they finish their uni, so that when the time comes for graduation and, you know, you're burnt out and you just want to have a rest for a little while, that you can put things a little bit of hiatus, but you've already organized most of what's going to happen when you start?
100%. I would highly recommend, as soon as you start uni, start a social media if you have a name from the get-go. Even if it's just a lifestyle page, whatever, just start getting your name out there. Because by the time you get to clinic, you want to be having clients coming in on your own accord to get that experience. So then when you do finish, you have had enough clients to go, okay, now I can be out in my own business and be in the real world. And some of them might follow you, or you might have other clients from that social media. Social media is an incredible free marketing tool, one of the best. Another thing I would highly recommend is start getting all your resources ready from as soon as you're starting uni, because the amount of stuff that you will end up with on your computer, from handouts to research that you need to, oh, the amount of folders I have is insane, with all different things from gut to immune to a protein-rich diet to, so that's another thing I would highly recommend to start doing. And yeah, I reckon if you have enough time within clinic, because I know clinic is very taxing, if you have enough time, definitely start. If you know your business name, buy it. There's nothing holding you back. Just get it. Then you've got it. Same with your domain or your email. Just start doing little bits and pieces. You don't have to do everything all at once, but just start getting the ball rolling. And then when you finish uni, you can have a break and you can go, oh, and relax. But it's already kind of started. Yeah.
It's really interesting that even the alien nomenclature that's used, like, what? I'm a director?
Yeah.
It's like, it's really funny how, you know, I didn't feel like I could own that space. It was this funny thing. And I thought, oh yeah, it's my company. I'm a director. So it's really, really weird that mind flip that has to happen. Can I ask, Naomi, did you, in the later stages of your education, did you get extra help from a mentor, even in the business sense or practice sense at all?
No, not yet. I'm actually starting to look at that now. But from depending where you're at, what you're doing, you might come from a rich family, or you might just be like me who works a side job, who always has. But it hasn't been in the cards as of yet, just because, look, the economy, the way things are going, I'm not there yet. But I do have, and these day and days, God, I've seen people paying upwards of 50 grand for a business coach. I'm like, that's, yeah, which yeah. is insane. Yeah.
I'd prefer the car.
Yeah. Or even the house.
But it's a real, I'm not taking away the necessity of it. I think it's so important once you can afford it. But yes, the affordability has got to be there for somebody. That's why I really applaud what you've done with your ebook about just giving somebody a helping hand for it's a meager price, what, $25 or something.
Yeah.
And I just think something like that is so important to give somebody the confidence to go, I think I can do it. I think I can do this. You know, I think it's so important. Like, I really applaud your efforts. You must have been the popular classmate in your cohort.
Oh, the amount of questions I got asked, and everybody was coming to me going, how'd you do this? How'd you do that? And I was like, oh, this way, that way. And then I ended up just making the ebook because it was just way easier. I was like, yep. Buy this, take it. It's all in there. I've got it all for you.
Right. So I've got to ask you about social media marketing. Like, I am a social media numpty. even pressing the buttons, and then younger friends of mine, like Lindsay Steven or Beck Guild, basically my other sister, you know, they'll go, listen here, you twit, those three dots up there, you know, like simple things like that. What about social media navigation?
Well, that's another thing. Even coming back to mentoring, right? It's like, when you finish, do you want to get a mentor in marketing? Do you want to get a mentor in business? Do you want to get a mentor from another naturopath to learn more? Like, there's a lot of avenues when it comes to it, because I think social media, I personally have grown up with social media. I've had it from quite a young age, so I understand it. I actually quite enjoy it as a free tool and a business resource. But there is sometimes limitations with it, like with the new algorithms and things that go on that way. So like, I know for a while there, nobody's photos were getting shown and they were really prioritizing reels and videos. So then people that weren't posting reels and videos weren't even getting seen. So then you've really kind of got to keep up with it and you've got to understand the steps with it. So I think there is limitations with it, but it's a free tool. Why would you not use it? And yeah, especially starting out, you want to be using all the free tools you can until you get to a point where you go, oh, hey, maybe I will invest in a marketing coach or a business coach. Or maybe you'll go, actually, I think I want to learn more about the immune system. I'm going to find the best naturopath who's doing mentoring in the immune system. Like you might find your niche or whatever. So I think there's definitely avenues to go down and to work towards, and things might pop up. You might meet someone one day and they'll go, oh, hey, I do this. And you'll be like, perfect timing. They always say your teacher finds you at the right time, don't they? So yeah, I think it definitely depends. But I think if as a student or just finishing with, depending where you're at, social media is one of the best tools you could possibly use.
So further education. How useful was further education? How early did you start it? Like, for instance, you get companies that allow students to come along to some of their educational events. Most of them will allow it from a certain year. I think it's third year on. But how useful did you find seminars put on by companies as opposed to, say, non-commercial entities?
So I've watched a few webinars online regarding with different companies, and some of them you can really see are really trying to push towards their products more than helping with conditions and things. But then last year, I actually went to the NHAA symposium in Sydney, which was absolutely amazing because it was the first face-to-face symposium that I'd ever been to. And it was really good to meet other practitioners, other like-minded people, be in an environment where we're all so buzzing and enthusiastic about health, aren't we? And it was really good to get to meet all the different companies and try the different products, because obviously you're not going to buy all the different products just to try it yourself. So it was good to go around and see what the new research was or why they came up with a new product and why it's better than another different product. Or so that was one of the best things that I've ever done, I reckon. That was probably the best investment. I actually flew down there on my own. Went for a little solo trip, which was really good because it got me out of my comfort zone and I met some amazing other practitioners, which I still talk to today. So that was awesome. But yeah, that was great. And it was really good to watch different speakers talk about topics that they are so enthusiastic about. I think sometimes we might get a little bit stuck in the mundane of we're in our clinic and we're holding space for our patients and we're very like with that and we forget to go, hey, look at what this person's doing, or look at where this research is going, or and get excited about different things. So I feel like that really got the spark back for me.
Yeah, totally agree. That it's so interesting how COVID brought about, forced a pivot in that we all had to accept the online webinar and people grew to like it. But to say that it's going to totally take over face-to-face is erroneous. Like people need that connection. And so that's why, like, I think the smartest things that companies and associations are doing is these hybrid events where people can go to a webinar if they feel they need that personal connection. But sometimes you might not be able to afford it. I get it. So therefore you can have that you know, connection sometimes. By being an online participant. But what I think some of these companies and associations, some of the smartest things they do is for those people that are attending remotely, they have connection for them. That's a real smart thing where they have like a breakout room where people can meet and chat and go, hey, how are you going? And oh, I'm from Melbourne, I'm from Queensland, what's going on? I think that's one of the most important sort of new things that's happening with online education. But I'm so glad that you were that you took the opportunity to go and attend an event like the NHAA symposium. I think that's great that you can go and meet your ilk, your brethren.
It was so good. It's just so nice to be around like-minded people. Like, I don't know, sometimes when I'm around my everyday friends and you talk about some things and all, you're buzzing and exciting about stuff and they just have no idea what you're talking about. So it's just so good to be around people that you all have such a great interest for health and herbs and nutrients, and we all understand it and have a deep love for it.
You know, one of the things I need to ask you is, you're this young, bubbly, bright, sparky personality. I'm old. And I can still remember when I was young, late 20s, mid to late 20s. And I always thought, oh, people will judge me as not having enough life experience. And so somebody who's more mature and more further advanced along their life's journey might not want to come and see me because I'm younger. The funny thing is, now that I'm older, I can't say more mature because I'm not, but now that I'm older, it's really funny how I go, oh man, I wish I was younger and that I could have done all of those things, because I learned so much from these young practitioners like yourself. So how did you navigate it personally? What was going on inside you? Did you have any sort of qualms and insecurities about how you'd be accepted by more mature patients?
I think you always still get nervous. I still always get nervous if I have a new client. And I think it's just that exciting, bubbly, oh my God, I'm going to help someone new, which is exciting. But maybe it's just the personality type that I am, but I don't really think of myself like that. I think I have a role to play in this industry. I think I can hold the space for people. I can help them. I can understand. I have a deep knowledge of from where I've already come from. And if I don't, I know where to find more information or how to get help if I need it. And I think that even a lot of my patients have actually been my age, and I understand going through similar things or the way we've grown up or conditions within our age group, which is, I think, a very good advantage to have. And then for older clients that I have had, just listening. Listening is the best tool. That's why we're here. We are here to listen to what is going on with them. And I think even just using that and understanding, they go, wow, you have been there for me. And they're so appreciative. So I don't really think there is an age gap I don't think that there's any negativity towards me being younger or inexperienced. Or I think we all have a role to play here, and I think there's all space and time for all of us.
Well done, you, and a hoorah for you for about listening. In fact, there was some research done on why people see naturopaths. This is quite a few years ago. And one of the most important things is that the patients felt listened to, where the medical model is driven by a time thing. And indeed, if a doctor spends too much time, they are a bad doctor. They are actually castigated for spending too much time. So a doctor with too many long consults is outside the bell curve of usual healthcare, and they get attacked, which is just the strangest form of medicine if you think about actual medicine rather than economics. So last question, Naomi, where can we find out more? Now we've spoken about the ebook, we need to find this.
So my ebook you can find on my website, which is thebowloflemons.com.au, all one word. My handle on Instagram is thebowloflemons. And my email, you can email me if you want to find out more. It's naomi@thebowloflemons.com.au.
I said last question. Here's the last question. the bowl of lemons. We have to investigate this because I thought it was so cute. Tell us about how you formed that name, the business name. It's not a usual business name.
No, it's not. And it's actually really funny. I came up with it. Oh God, I would have been 20. Yeah, it was before I started my degree. My best friend and I, she is a Pilates instructor, and we were just sitting in the car and she was telling me how she started a page for all of her Pilates things and getting a Pilates business going. And I was going, maybe I should do that. I love my health and my fitness, and I want to start sharing more about what I'm doing. And we were sitting in the car one day and we were bickering back and forth, and I was like, oh, life gives you lemons. You know that old saying, life gives you lemons? And then my best friend goes, the bowl of lemons. You always have a bowl of lemons in your kitchen. Why don't you call it the bowl of lemons? And I was like, the bowl of lemons, and it just stuck. And even to this day, everyone's like, I love that name. How'd you come up with it? And it's, yeah, just been the name that's stuck, and I absolutely love it. And it's like my baby now. I can't part ways with it.
Well, the funny thing is it seems like a negative, you know, the bowl of lemons, but then it makes people think about, oh yeah, yeah, lemonade. So yeah. It's really, so it's an invitation to health. It's really great. I love it.
Yeah. Yes. It's funny how, yeah, the older I've got, the more I'm like, wow, that was kind of a little bit of a background, like health spin on the word, like the bowl of lemons, but not understanding that that's like actually what I was trying to say. It was more like life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. Like,
I think it's so gorgeous. Naomi, thank you so much for taking us through your journey. And like, I could just see future success for you. You are such a giving person. You've got the right aspect in your heart. I love what I'm hearing from you. So well done so far. Well done on helping others, not just patients, but also your colleagues. It's really important. And indeed, that's what today's podcast was about. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Andrew, and giving me this opportunity.
My pleasure indeed. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Remember, you can catch up on all the show notes and the other podcasts on naturalmedicinepartners.com.au. I'm Andrew Whitfield-Cook, and this is the Natural Medicine Podcast.